You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for July 11th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the coal mines of Barzum, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Martian name for Mars.
Yes, John Carter of Mars. John Carter, coal miner of Mars. One of the lesser known John Carter stories. Yeah.
Well, the reason we're bringing this up is we want to give a hat tip to Phil Plate, who I have met at one time at a Americans United for the Separation of Church and State conference. Phil Plate of Bad Astronomy is now at Slate, and he brought up a quote from State Representative Brandon Smith, guess which party, Kentucky.
Venusian. He hates those Martians. Yeah.
I don't want to get into the debate about climate change. They always start that way.
I'm not a scientist, a big fancy scientist such as yourself. So
I will simply point out that I think in academia we all agree. Okay, this is going to get bad.
We all do? Really? Okay.
I think in academia we all agree that the temperature on Mars is exactly as it is here. Nobody will dispute that. Yet there are no coal mines on Mars. There are no factories on Mars that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
And Phil Plate of Bad Astronomy said, I'm an astronomer and I will dispute that.
Yeah.
if you need somebody.
Call on me. Yeah.
He pointed out that Earth's average temperature is plus 57 degrees Fahrenheit and Mars' average temperature is minus 67 degrees Fahrenheit. That's more than a difference of 10 degrees, if you need to know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Phil Plate also, the point of his article on Slate was that he applauded the BBC. They have stopped the practice of deciding to have a science denier on at the same time that they have a global warming story just to teach a controversy because these guys are crackpots.
Yeah.
So they've decided they don't have to have both sides on if there is a scientifically proven fact.
Yeah.
And they've made that policy. And Phil Plate said, you know, that's step one. Step two is stop electing them to office.
Yeah. Well, there is a reciprocating relationship between how the media treats people and the people who get elected. And it's not a one way. Again, it's a reciprocal relationship.
Yeah. Yeah.
The marketplace created by Fox is filled by Republicans. Mm-hmm. The craziness of breeding Republicans to be morons and to be science deniers and to be is what gives Fox its audience. Mm-hmm. And you break that by simply saying, if you're in this area over here, you can stay in this area, but we're not going to put you on any other national public interest media, period, because you're fucking crazy. And that's all there is to it. And go forth and be well. Go with God, whatever weird God you worship.
Do your Facebook message. Sarah Palin's doing all her Facebook messages on video now, and she's going to talk straight to the people.
Nobody's taking away your First Amendment rights. No. We're using our First Amendment rights to laugh at your exercise of your First Amendment rights.
Laugh at you. Mm-hmm. Driftglass, you brought in the mail yesterday.
I did.
And we got an invitation from our Congressman Rodney Davis.
We did. And bringing in the mail is not code for anything. It's just I brought in the mail.
Actually, this is addressed specifically to me.
To Blue Gal or to the ladies?
It's addressed to me.
Uh-huh.
And this mailing was prepared, published, and mailed at taxpayer expense. Rodney Davis is having an Investing in Women inaugural women's event. Mm-hmm. And it's free and open to the public. To talk about, what are they going to talk about? Hold on a minute.
Ladies vote free from 5 to 7. Yeah.
Yeah. What I would hope it would be a place where we could wear our Code Pink t-shirts and also talk about reproductive rights. Mm-hmm. But it turns out, no, it's registration and a little don't Danish or whatever. The congressman welcomes you and then he probably leaves.
Yep.
9:45 to 10:45, you get to go to a breakout session on growing your network.
Oh, I should go to that.
Or you can go to another one called Startup Your Greatness. Startup Your Greatness.
Uh-huh.
To enjoy life's journey to the fullest.
Somebody has dipped twice into the Mad Libs bag.
Yes.
So.
Then from 11 to 12:30, there's a keynote session with four corporate women who one's a congresswoman from Indiana. Guess which party? There's a Channel 3 morning show news anchor who's going to be speaking.
That's nice.
And a litigation lawyer and the chancellor of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Good for her.
Good for her.
But it's definitely your corporate feminism.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't look like there's any opportunity to do a pro-choice conga line, which is what I want to do.
Well, you lost me when you told me there wasn't a wet public policy t-shirt contest.
Yeah, he's scared, I think.
Well, and this is a good
thing. I don't blame him for being scared.
He's in a mixed district.
He's in a 50-50 district. It's definitely been gerrymandered to help Democrats because it contains like five universities.
Yeah.
And to Rodney Davis's credit, I do want to give credit. Credit is due.
Five universities and three FEMA camps.
Rodney Davis, and I mentioned this on the podcast before, and he is a Republican.
He is.
But he categorically supported, without any asterisks, the Violence Against Women Act. He just said, I'm for it. I'm voting for it. I'm voting yes. We're done. And he didn't prevaricate, and he didn't make any political hay about it. He just said, no, we're just going to vote for this. So he didn't play the Tea Party game on that or the Fox News game on that at all. But I, on this postcard about how he's dedicated to making Washington work for me, he believes in family first and supporting the Working Families Flexibility Act. Now, that sounds great.
Is that yoga classes for dad?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm for that.
Rodney voted to give parents more flexibility within the workplace so they have the choice of more paid time off rather than cash wages for overtime worked.
Uh-huh. Not both, huh?
Not both.
No.
No. No. I guess you have to choose.
Oh, okay.
And then he wants to, it's pretty clear that he wants to diss teachers' unions from all of this.
We all do.
He voted in favor of preventing student loan rates from doubling, and he worked for the Skills Act, which is a workforce training act. So, you know, he has done those good things, and it's because he is not in a safe district at
all. Because he has to. This really is what I mentioned also that Alan Dixon, the senator from Illinois,
who passed away,
was I heard his biographer on a radio, I think, and a couple of other things who was very explicit that he did not want to be called a liberal in his biography. Which I kind of, you know, okay, whatever, dude. He's old-fashioned, you know, farm belt Democrat.
Good government Democrat.
He was a good government, but he was like Mr. Frickin' Dealmaker. And by the way, Al Hofeld getting into the race, this is how Carol Moseley Braun got into the Senate. Al Hofeld basically took him out, entered the race, and made it impossible for Alan Dixon to win, or it came really close. And that tossed the victory to Carol Moseley Braun. And that was historic, and she proved herself to be a very bad senator.
Yeah.
And she was a one-term senator, but that's how politics got played. But Alan Dixon, I mean, I'm sure lots of people have stories about him that are unfavorable or favorable, but his whole attitude towards government was as imperfect and awful as it might be to compromise and make backroom deals and so forth. That's how government works.
That's how you get shit done. Yeah.
And he was like an old school Paul. He was an old school Illinois Paul who got shit done.
Mm-hmm.
And Rodney Davis, who will never get my vote, even if I live in the district.
Yeah.
He will never get my vote. But my existence within his district makes it necessary for him to try to throw me something.
Right.
And
that's why I'm so adamant that gerrymandering has got to be stopped. These districts should be drawn by the courts. They should be drawn with rules regarding geometry so that it has to be as square as possible. Or as circular as possible.
Now where this analysis kind of breaks down is when you look at the facts on the ground, of what happens when you force people to take into consideration the views of their entire constituency.
Yep, yep, yep.
You find that what Republicans who run unopposed want is horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
It's complete deregulation of everything, impeachment of the president of the United States for whatever the fuck they can find, you know, in the sofa cushions. Yeah, impeachment for that. And who seriously, there are senators and congressmen who really believe that who've already printed the impeachment paperwork and are just looking for something to plug into the slot where it says charges.
Yeah, just like the lawsuit. They you know, took 3 weeks to decide what they were going to sue him for. Yeah.
And you have anti-science deniers. You have really nut job. Let's deregulate everything. People who believe patently insane shit, who elect people who reflect their insanity. When you go to Democratic safe districts, there's nothing comparable. There's absolutely no one running for office who wants to nationalize the car companies, who wants to take over the banks and have them run as a socialist collective. There ain't nobody on the left who's as left as the right is on the right every fucking day. This is where the joining them together is a good idea. Making conservatives fight for votes, making Republicans fight for votes in contested districts is a good thing because it keeps them honest. But when you tease apart their policy positions, every Democrat, almost without exception, is well to the right of where the party was when George McGovern was running for president. So it's not as if the country has actually diverged in two directions. The country has diverged in one direction. Democrats have become moderate Republicans, and Republicans have become crazy. So this idea that this is a two-sided problem, that when you have gerrymandered Democratic districts, you get people who believe crazy things, is where the analogy breaks down.
Yeah.
Because they don't. They really don't.
They don't want to dissolve the Defense Department.
No.
And if we were talking about both sides that way, that's where the Democrats would be. No, we're just going to dissolve the Defense Department.
Yeah. We're going to give it up.
Just like the Republicans want to dissolve the Education Department.
No.
Yeah.
When you get distilled modern Democrats, you get Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who I adore. But you don't get Che Guevara. You just don't. And that's just not the case. And so this is where, as good as it is that Rodney Davis has to be answerable to people like me because we're in sufficient numbers in his district where he has to, the basic philosophy of conservatism is so broken right now that it itself needs to be burned to the ground and something else has to take its place, or else we're screwed long term. Anyway, on that hopeful note.
Well, and I just want to reiterate that Rodney Davis is worried about the women's vote.
He is. And he should
be. And at taxpayer expense, he's sending me an invitation to come and listen to six women in suits talk about startup businesses.
And greatness. Okay. So this is a good sign. I will find hope wherever I can.
I really do want to wear my I'm pro-choice and I vote t-shirt and just show up.
Yeah.
All right. We got a letter. There's just been this ongoing conversation this summer in our podcast about race. And I love that. I just love the fact that we're kind of going back and forth. If we had a producer and a radio station and a staff, we would probably have everyone calling in and talk about this. But
if we had a producer and a staff and a business plan and a station manager, at this point, the station manager would be standing in the window waving his arms going, don't talk about race.
That's true. Yeah. We got a letter 2 weeks ago from a friend of the podcast about whether or not African Americans would ever go to Florida because of the crazy gun craziness against black people. Then black gal in a blue state last week wrote in and said she was going to Florida, damn it, and that white liberals needed to realize that black people are entitled to a vacation and so forth. And go back and listen to those two shows and those two letters and you'll hear the controversy, so to speak. The first letter writer felt a little bit, I think, thrown under the bus by the fact that we criticized his throwaway comment about Florida, which was not our intention. We really took black girl in a blue state letter to be directed at us, not at any letter writer.
Yeah. You and me, blue gal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So black guy in a blue state wrote to us last night. And I'm just going to read I copied part of his letter into this podcast notes.
So now we know two black people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Drift Glass.
Yeah. Yeah. That was my Stephen Colbert moment. Yeah. Yeah.
Here's what black guy in a blue state has to say on this topic. Boycotting, as you might do in Florida, is not easy, especially when you have become so enamored with the products or services that you purchase. Using those products and services becomes more than habit. They become part of our identity. To ask a person to boycott a company like Disney, for example, is almost blasphemy. So I can completely understand a person's frustrations when someone alerts you of the wrongs a company or institution has done, and you are left with the guilt of giving such institutions your money. And I want to I want to add to that, that I got an email this week, the subject line of which was, is your cell phone built by child labor?
Yeah.
And I, like I'm sure a lot of people, deleted it unread because I can't think about that. You know,
It probably is.
It probably is. And that makes me feel horrible.
And this podcast, as you've said numerous times, is powered by coal.
Powered by coal and powered by cell phones that might be built by child labor. Or forced abortions, or, you know, this is the thing that some of these choices are really difficult.
This is the entangling power of capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the power of, this is my Mad Men plug, marketing.
Yeah.
You know, it's lucky strike.
And the essential nature of some technologies to our lives, you know, that's part of it.
Yeah, but
I want to get back to the letter drift glass.
Cause Lucky Strike is toasted, honey.
We are running out of time.
Yeah, let's roll.
Really running out of time.
Okay.
I feel as though a black girl in a blue state has unjustly attacked the messenger. How can she assume that the writer was white for simply suggesting boycotting a state because the state of Florida has some of the stupidest gun laws in the country? Maybe Stevie Wonder wrote the letter. He's the biggest celebrity to start the Boycott Florida movement. How can she assume that white people will love it if black people would leave Florida with its beaches and amusement parks? No, racists will love it. Actually, that's not 100% accurate either. Boycotting has always been black people's strongest weapon. If all black people took their dollars someplace else, Florida's tourism would take a big financial hit. That's why civil rights leaders like Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X have always advocated boycotts. Black people deciding not to spend their dollar at a racist company have always irritated racists as well. That black dollar is a good dollar.
Yep.
Also, the writer didn't suggest moving to a new state. He suggested outsiders considering a different vacation destination. The planet has many others to choose from. Then there was the attack on all white liberals. I'm sorry that her personal experiences with white Democratic voters and their hypocrisies have left her jaded. But that does not excuse grossly generalizing all white liberals. I have seen whites stand up to racism. I have seen whites stand up to racism when they didn't know black people were watching. When I was younger, I myself was shocked to listen to a white person give a speech on the struggles of African Americans with the same amount of gravitas as any famous black civil rights leader. Any human being with an open mind and the ability to empathize can understand the struggles another human being goes through, no matter what the ethnicity. Let's face it, Chappelle's show was right. Some white people really do know black people. At the end of the letter, she wrote that if her assumption was wrong and the commenter was black, then when have white liberals ever come to our defense when it could not be used as a weapon against conservatives? I will not get into how if the writer was black, then she went on a rant against white liberals for nothing. Shouldn't Andrew Goodman and Michael Schwerner serve as prime examples that we are all in this together? Both sides are responsible to fix this because it's our house. And she was saying white liberals need to clean up their house with white people. And then he says, thank you so much for taking the time to read a fan's letter, best. And yes, but it's how I want to respond to this. You know, we all have responsibility for our actions and for standing up to what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But we all make mistakes too.
Yeah.
And I think about Joe Biden and saying that Barack Obama was clean.
Yeah. Yep.
And Harry Reid saying, you know, he doesn't speak with a black dialect. That's just awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Neither one of those privileged white men in the U.S. Senate intended for that to be a racial slur. It came out that way.
Yeah.
And they apologized. And it came from a position of white supremacy that
it did.
You know, white privilege to
undeniably.
Say.
Undeniably. Yeah.
Undeniably.
Mm-hmm.
But this black president thing is a new thing, and we're probably going to face a woman president thing, which is going to be a new thing.
Uh-huh.
And we well-intentioned people might screw up and might say things that we do not intend to be sexist or racist, but they come out that way. And then we have to correct it, and we have to say we're sorry and we didn't mean it that way.
And then, well, and we have to think about why did it come out that way?
Yep. Yeah,
what exactly was it that, you know, give it a good think,
mm-hmm.
figure out what's, you know, am I being a jerk? Did this come out wrong? Mm-hmm. Am I talking to someone who's having a really bad day?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the world is full of people who are having a bad day or having a bad week and they snap at you and they say a terrible thing. And because they particularly hate the group you're in, but because they're looking for that word that hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
Or conversely, you say something innocuous and it offends them because they're having a bad day. Because
they've been consciously offended enough times that their armor is just on.
Yeah. And
you're not going to get behind that. You're not.
I understand all of it. And that is not to say that's intermixed with really legitimate critical race theory of the structures of white supremacy, the structures of patriarchy, and how it is perpetuated through language, through the subtle use of language, through the subtle use of cultural tools, as well as very gross things like redlining and segregation.
Mm-hmm.
And navigating this is I wish there were a straight line out of this minefield
because
I would march right out of it.
Yep.
But there isn't.
Yep.
And so occasionally I will step on a landmine and I will apologize profusely, realizing, of course, that the blowback from my mistake is trivial compared to the blowback for someone else who is less privileged than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And other than proceeding forward as fast as we can, you know, the Teddy Roosevelt quote about doing what you can with what you have where you are.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much the limits. In a weird way, this is similar in a sense to what Steve Gilliard used to say about Iraq, which is it's all of our problem.
Yeah.
Our country did this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the 48% of us who said, fuck no, let's not do this, this is insane, can't just check out of it and say, well, that's their problem.
Yeah.
No, the rest of the world looks at America, all of us, coast to coast, and say, you did this.
You tortured.
And make differentiations between how righteous you were and how wrong you were.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're Americans and you collectively fucked up. Well, this is our problem. As Americans, this is our problem. Some people want to deny the problem. Some people want to keep things just the way they are. Some people want to roll things back. And some people want to move forward fast.
Mm-hmm.
Some people move forward haltingly. And that's the bus we're on.
We're not going to get too deeply into the immigration children issue on the border this week. But Crystal Ball on Twitter did say exactly what you just said about the children that have come over unaccompanied and said, you know, these children are here now and they're our responsibility because they're here now.
Yeah.
And we're going to be judged on how we treat those children here and now,
mm-hmm.
not on any political invasion fantasy that people have about them. They're here. And how do you treat them?
And in case you all haven't heard, being mostly good liberals, I assume, I'm sure almost everyone's heard that this is the law. This is the George Bush law that was passed by both houses of Congress.
Signed in a bipartisan way, yes.
That was all about child sex trafficking.
Yep.
That if an unaccompanied minor shows up here that's not from Mexico, they have a special legal status that must be attended to immediately for really good reasons.
Mm-hmm.
All of these laws were passed with the best of intentions.
Well, and sometimes laws get passed with the best of intentions that wind up having
blowback
and possibilities that weren't thought about at the time. And that happened with the Mann Act, where, you know, the idea was to stop sex trafficking of young unaccompanied women.
Uh-huh.
And it wound up being a really sexist law and racist law that was used very selectively against specific people to arrest specific people who were unfriendly to the government of the state where they were. And it was a bad law. And in the end, they figured out, okay, it's a bad law. But the Mann Act is still on the books when it comes to children.
Yes. Yes.
If you kidnap a child for your pornography business and take them across state lines for your pornography business, you are in violation of federal law.
Right.
The Mann Act. You're still in violation of that.
And you know that because?
Because my ex-husband wrote the book on the Mann Act.
Ah.
So, literally wrote the book on the Mann Act. So, I mean, laws sometimes need to be fixed.
Uh-huh. Well, prohibition. Prohibition was started with very good intentions.
Yeah, yeah.
It was look at all the disasters that are being visited on people through drunkenness.
And there were a lot of feminists who were in favor of prohibition in order to
protect women,
fix the problem of domestic violence.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
And
that was not the fix. That wasn't the fix that was needed. What was and actually, what's interesting about prohibition is it made more women drink because you went to a speakeasy and you drank, and that was part of the activity. You did a speakeasy. All right.
These are children. These are children who've shown up on our doorstep. And if if we can't just say, you know what, we're going to table the political bullshit for a while, we're going to take care of the kids, and we'll get back to hating each other once these kids are sheltered and fed and have someone mm-hmm. who's adjudicating the merits of their case and are figuring out how we can best help them. Because you know what? Here's the thing that drives me insane about this. Not the complete lack of humanity on the part of the people who are waving the signs on the borders. Not the abstract contempt for illegals being translated into hatred for children by the party of choice and love and life, you know? Mm-hmm. The lawsuit that's going to be triggered by this, by the party of tort reform. Just the fucking across the board hypocrisy of the same people who were screaming about Elian Gonzalez, you know, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
None of that. Look, take care of the children. I am just old enough to remember how America used to be beloved abroad in lots of countries because they remembered the Marshall Plan.
Mm-hmm.
And you would go into little houses where we lived in the Philippines for a while and see, you know, bamboo portraiture of John F. Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And people had really fond memories of the Hershey bar, of the chocolate airlift
mm-hmm.
in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
People liked America. We were still what we were. We still had racism. We still had all these terrible problems. But we were considered to be a generous and kind nation. And there was a lot of sort of really brutal world politics. We're competing with the communists, so we have to look good mm-hmm. behind that. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. we did a lot of kind, generous things. And it paid us back tenfold,
absolutely, hundredfold
through goodwill.
Yeah.
If you take in 10,000 children today,
a million children,
and well, I'm saying if you take in 10,000 children today and protect them and shelter them until they can go home,
mm-hmm.
and they go home, what are they going to say about America when they are 15 and 20 and 30 years old?
Mm-hmm.
When they become adults, when they enter the Foreign Service, when they run for office, when they start making decisions as grownups, what will they think of America then? They will think America was a kind and generous place full of interesting and diverse people who put aside their differences to help them because they needed help. And that kind of goodwill you cannot buy, except you can. It only costs $3 billion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
well, and the screaming harpies on the right are the ones that are preventing Congress, turning Congress into a bunch of chicken shits on immigration.
And that's the face of America that these people will grow up with if we don't make sure that they have nothing to say in our national dialogue.
Yep. They'll think Americans are a bunch of white racists who can't spell. Because you can hate Obama or you can spell. You can't do both.
All right. Those are your choices. All right. Moving on.
Bible Bitch has a bone to pick
uh-huh.
with one of the protesters down in Murrieta, California, who responded, I guess, to a person in the faith community talking about how maybe we should emulate Jesus in this regard. And she said, Jesus wouldn't break the law.
Uh-huh.
Are we done here?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
2 weeks ago, I read from Matthew 12 about Jesus saying
I'd rather have
a flexible, loving heart than rigidity when it comes to the law.
Mm-hmm.
Direct quote from the Bible on that.
Yeah.
And then we have Hobby Lobby Girl, who got real cute and has been a sensation. Did you know she had her 15 minutes on Fox News, too?
Really?
Yes, she did.
Oh, yeah, that's
she good. Got to go on Fox and be interviewed because what's this all about? I'm just a mom, you know. Mm-hmm. But she posed for Instagram wearing a pro-life T-shirt in front of a Hobby Lobby carrying a Chick-fil-A Big Gulp. And don't click on this picture, liberals. Your head will explode.
Yeah.
And then someone said, well, you're missing your flag and your gun and your Bible. So she posed in front of a flag
uh-huh.
with a big Bible and a big gun that
uh-huh.
she had no problem finding in her own home.
No.
Semi-automatic, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm. And then someone paired that photo.
Someone paired that photo with an Islamic terrorist woman holding uh-huh. up the Quran and a gun.
In front of a flag.
In front of a flag. And this morning on Facebook, someone posted his picture. He's got his Canadian t-shirt on in front of a Canadian flag, and he's carrying a hockey stick and a Molson. Oh, yeah, that's it, eh?
I, you know, I'm reminded the first woman, the Jesus wouldn't break the law.
Yeah.
There's a sketch about, I forget, a very quick comedy sketch about a guy having a conversation with a taxi driver who's just started reading the Bible. And the punchline is, don't tell him how it ends.
Yes.
Jesus is doing all these great things. You know, he dies in the end, right? What? So
he gets nailed to a tree for breaking what was perceived to be the law.
The big one. The big law. The big one. Back, you know, back when in this is where, you know, conservative dreamland, where church and state are the same thing.
The same thing.
Exactly the same
theocracy. Thing. Absolutely.
And I am just kind of if she's only reading, she's only read the first few pages. So
don't tell
her about the other stuff because it's going to blow her mind when she finds out what really happens. It's there's a plot twist. There's a lot of loving and kissing, and then it gets very bad. Mothers show up, intrigue, best friends, a road trip. It's an adventure for the whole family.
Well, the thing that really disturbs me though about these folks and Hobby Lobby Girl in particular is. Her idea of politics is to make liberals mad.
Right.
That is the whole point of politics for her.
Right. And
so what happens when a person like that lives in West Virginia and Freedom Industries poisons their drinking water?
Got to find a way to blame
liberals. What happens to if that person, like a lot of people are in Texas, have the West Fertilizer Company storing explosive fertilizer right next to a middle school, mm-hmm. and it blows up. And, you know, these companies didn't break the law.
No, they wrote
the law. There wasn't any regulation protecting people over corporations
at all. They wrote the law because they didn't want them liberals interfering with the freedoms and such.
Right. And I've got my Bible and my gun and my flag, and that's going to keep me safe.
And then your house blows over. The big bad wolf comes and blows your house down.
Then what?
And well, I'm guessing at least some of them are gonna do a Trent Lott.
Yeah. Well, this is my property.
Yeah. Well, no, Trent Lott, who was all about tort reform and frivolous lawsuits,
until his insurance company wouldn't cover the flood from Katrina on his house.
Yes, and then he went and hired himself the best anti-tobacco lawyer he could find, best liberal anti-tobacco lawyer he could find, and sued them because then it's his problem, then it's his family, then it's his property, and that's different. That's fucking different than yours. Yours is just some liberal crap. I am reminded that in Chicago, you can drive all over this country and hear nothing but conservative talk radio from coast to coast. Drive through Chicago and there's WIND, which is where Mark Levin spouts his hate speech. It's wall to wall right wing lunatics all the time. But their slogan, they used to have a billboard that I photoed, I caught a picture of or caught one offline, that their slogan used to be "Liberals hate us." It really is. Their entire fucking lineup was saying shit to make liberals mad.
Yeah.
And you know what really makes us mad? When you set fire to the Constitution. Yeah, let's do that. That'll make them mad. You know what will make them mad? Killing kids. Making kids suffer.
Spewing black smoke from our truck into the air. Yeah. That'll do it.
Yeah. You know what they hate? They hate it when we stomp on poor people. So let's kick them some more. Let's invade a few more countries. Yeah. And they're all sort of giggling, half-wit school kids. You know what they really hate this time?
Hair.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter because as long as I make you suffer while I'm in hell, I'm okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the kind of – there's no reasoning with that because there's something in the brain. There's something wired into their heads after years of propaganda that just tickles their endorphins every time they think they've said something that some liberal somewhere would hate.
Mm-hmm.
And you string those vicious – idiotic anti-science thoughts together, and that's the GOP. That's the Republican, that's conservatism in America.
Well, and I've got news for the two conservative listeners who listen to this podcast. We're laughing at you.
Yes. Yes.
We're not, it doesn't make our heads explode.
No.
At all.
No. We are vexed by the fact that you're holding a gun to your own head threatening
to try to make us mad.
You're doing the Cleavon Little. You put the gun to your head and saying,
he'll do it.
He'll do it. He's crazy. He'll do it. Okay. Pull it, baby. Go right ahead. But the problem, of course, is that when you let your local chemical company store volatile chemicals in the school gymnasium.
Right.
My kids
are next door to the school.
My kids are going up in the fire along with yours.
And it's worse than that because the Texas Attorney General has, and the law in Texas is they don't have to tell you what chemicals are stored there.
Right. None of your damn.
In North Carolina and in Pennsylvania, they've made it illegal for people to talk about what fracking chemicals are being used.
Wait.
Under your property.
Wait 5 years and it'll become a sacrament. Yeah. It'll become a corporate religious sacrament. Yep. And we're not allowed to talk about it because our faith won't allow
us to. Faith won't allow us to talk about fracking chemicals.
We're using to extract the Jesus juice from under the ground where the devil lives. And you will live to see that. In parts of this country, you will live to see a wasted hellscape where conservatism has been completely allowed to run wild. And
but Driftglass.
Yes?
I found out something this week.
What?
I'm an independent.
Yeah, aren't we all? America's just full of independents.
We're independents.
Yeah.
It turns out we're independents.
Uh-huh.
I want you to talk about this because you blogged about it this week.
I did.
The New York Times had an article called Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
Half of all Americans under the age of 34 describe themselves as politically independent.
Yes.
And then you dig down beneath the surface and find out that they're pro-gay marriage, anti-fracking, they're pro-EPA.
They're not afraid of gay marriage or contraception or sensible gun laws.
No.
They're for immigration reform.
They think government can be a force for good.
Force good. Yeah, okay.
But I'm an independent, again.
I'm climate change is real, but I'm independent.
No, you're not. You're a liberal.
What you are soured on political party identification.
Exactly.
And you
don't want it to affect your Thanksgiving dinner or your ability to get a job.
I'm Uncle Crazy. I'm just independent. Oh, okay. And as long as they're not a woman of Democrats.
Well, that's funny because I'm an independent, too.
I've been a
Republican for every Republican since Eisenhower, but I'm an independent.
And I understand how lots of self-identified independents, and again, this is the article that says this is the bulk of them, are pissed at Barack Obama for not being more liberal.
And not fighting you back.
Boy, do I understand that. Yeah. You know, single-payer health care, done. Closing Guantanamo Bay at the point of a gun. Yeah, we're going to issue an executive order to close that shit down. Sorry. And we're not going to fly drones anywhere else on the face of the earth. We're shutting the whole program down. We're going to drop
off meals for children.
Yes.
Use drones to deliver meals with U.S. flags on them.
Yeah, or agricultural analysis.
And they'll be halal meals over countries where that's necessary.
I'm not saying that tongue in cheek. I really do understand how I am, and I share your intense frustration that it took 6 goddamn years for Barack Obama to finally say, you know what the problem is with this country? Fucking Republicans are the problem with this country. You know what? Say that during your inaugural address. Okay, that would be a bit much. That'd be a bit much to ask. But say that in the first, you know, when they started fitting you for an impeachment rope, the day you started becoming president, that's the day when you had to take them on directly and say, no, they're the goddamn problem. I will fight to make this country a purple country, a unified country, but you have to lower your weapons now. I won. You lost. You have to stop behaving this way.
You can't filibuster your own bill just so that you don't pass anything under my administration.
But you didn't do that. You let them off the hook and you let them, and you taught them. By your example, you taught them that they could get away with murder.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're pissed that, again, the puppy that you raised to shit on the rug is now a dog that shits on the sofa.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course they are. You gave
them a bone every time on the rug. They're going to die.
You taught them that, this is how I get what I want, by being the most obnoxious prick in the world.
Yeah.
So you can't really bitch about that. But I understand the fury with my president not going nearly far enough to enact my agenda that I elected him to enact. I get that. What amuses me is the fact that it's I'm an independent. That's my out for having to support this guy who does things I disagree with. I'm an independent, even though I line up 80% with one of the two political parties. But the really hilarious part is if you study David Brooks like I do. Let me take out my pipe here and stroke my imaginary
beard.
Everybody take a drink. You know that when summer rolls around, it's time for the independence, the analysis of the independent voter crop is ripe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's time to go out into the fields and harvest it and see what those independents are up to. Because it is the perfect imaginary unicorn, political unicorn, for everyone to get all excited about. You don't want to talk about Democrats because then you have to talk about how they're actually right about shit. You don't want to talk about Republicans because you might have to point out that they're nuts. So, and the media just won't do that.
Nope.
So instead, let's talk about independents. Let's talk about these people who are centrist, who are nonpartisan, who are not aligned, who are not members of either party. Let's just jerk off to that, because that validates our position that both sides are always wrong. And you see how they've driven these good people out of the political process entirely into this beautiful centrist utopia where if Barack Obama just led, then things would be great.
Yeah, if you'd be more of a leader.
So you get every year you get the same Beltway jagoffs talking about the same goddamn subject, which is those darn independents as a bellwether of how right they are in their assessment of politics. Mm-hmm. The problem is that if you actually commit the grave political sin, what scientists refer to as chronic remembering stuff that happened in the past disorder, which I suffer from, I know you do too.
Yes.
To those of us who suffer from this debilitating disease, only 5 short years ago, in the New York Times, David Brooks wrote a column called "What Independents Want."
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, you know what independents, you know what character?
They were essentially conservative.
They were, according to Gallup, there's too much government, too much government regulation. And who want unions to have less influence? That's up too, according to one poll that I am now glomming together with a bunch of completely disparate, unrelated chunks of data to make a point that says Americans have moved to the right on abortion, immigration, and global warming, David Brooks said of independents 5 years ago. Over the past seven months, the number of people who say government is doing too many things better left to business has jumped from 40% to 48%, according to the Wall Street Journal NBC poll. And he really just does jam a bunch of bullshit together to make the point he was going to make all along, which is the country, it's a conservative country. You know, this is a center-right country, Blue Gal. And the independents reflect the bullshit bias that I carry with me into every argument. So 5 years ago, independents were conservatives and trending more conservative because immigration, global warming, that kind of crazy talk. They don't want anything to do with it. They want the government the hell out and they want unions shut down. 5 years later, the same goddamn group of people are suddenly liberals.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why talking about independents is a complete waste of time. Because for the most part, there are real true independents out there who really do a la carte every time they vote, a la carte every issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I respect them and I respect their opinion. But for the most part, independents are people who just for whatever reason, whether it's they're terribly embarrassed by the fact that they voted for George Bush twice, yeah, and they voted for Richard Nixon, and they voted for Ronald Reagan, and they voted for every conservative policy for the last 40 years, and they have been completely wrong about everything. And since they are cowards, they want to take no responsibility for the shit that they've left in their wake.
Right.
So now they're independents.
Yep.
Or they're appalled and disappointed with Barack Obama not going far enough to the left. And they just don't want to have that fight. They don't want to have that argument. They want to call themselves independents so they can hold themselves above and away from that guy and his very deeply flawed policies. But come election time, what they're going to do is go in and vote for a Democrat.
Yep.
So it's fun to talk about. Griffins and basilisks are also fun to talk about, and unicorns are, and leprechauns.
Dragons!
But they don't fucking exist.
Yeah.
They're not there. There's a tiny number of independents out there who are, again, truly independent. But for the most part, it's a fiction.
Well, as you say, if it's a choice that I don't want to make politics the center of all of my discussions,
yeah,
and therefore I'm going to opt out of choosing a side because I'm going to be neutral in the wars that are going on at my Thanksgiving table for the sake of peace. I get that.
And there are people, and I disagree.
But I blame the media
for
always needing everyone to be in the center because that means there's a horse race that people have to watch.
And there
isn't.
When I voted for John Anderson, I was an independent because
mm-hmm.
I thought Jimmy Carter was terrible and Ronald Reagan was insane. And I didn't mm-hmm. want to sully my electoral purity by casting a vote for anyone who was less than perfect. So I voted for the guy who I knew on some level was never going to get elected because I didn't want to have to apologize for voting for someone who actually had to win and govern at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to vote for the pure guy. I wanted to vote for Ralph Nader. I wanted to vote for whoever. I wanted to hold myself aloof. And I'm not going to get into the people who say Democrats should just step aside and let Republicans win. But there are prominent people on the left who say that because only after we completely destroy everything will we be able to rebuild our socialist paradise. I think those people are nuts and wrong mm-hmm. and are asking people who are much less privileged than they are to sacrifice what's important to them, like reproductive rights, like feeding their children and so forth, for their ideals.
Drift Fast, we're at an hour right now recording. And
let's roll, Blue Gal.
I want to just do a lightning round of a couple things. One right. is Pappy McDaniel. Oh, I'm sorry, Chris McDaniel.
Yes.
He's having a hard week again.
He is.
I just want to point out to people, if they don't know, that Mississippi has a sore loser law. The reason he can't run as an independent in the general election is because the law in Mississippi says that he can't. If you lose a primary, you cannot run as an independent afterwards.
Goddamn liberals in Mississippi.
No, I don't think that was it. I think it was Republican Party politics deciding.
Oh.
It is also the law that if you voted in the Democratic primary, you cannot vote in a Republican runoff. And that's what he's clinging to.
Yeah.
But it appears as though a lot of people didn't vote in the Democratic primary because that's a waste in Mississippi.
Right. Why do that? Oh, my God. Yeah.
So they did vote in the Republican primary because it was going to make a difference. Yeah. And they were asked to. And that's just the way that is.
And they were asked to vote for the lesser of two evils.
Yeah. And that's all they did.
What?
That's all they did. And race had nothing to do with it. It had to do with Democrats deciding, this McDaniel guy is going to really hurt our state, so we're going to not let him do that.
And you're in Mississippi. And when you're in hell and you're given a choice between a bag of scorpions and a cold drink, you're going to take the cold drink.
You're still
in hell, but you get the cold drink.
The other thing is that there is a law in Alabama, or they try to have a law in Alabama, where if you vote in the Democratic primary, and I can't attest to the Republican primary because I've never voted in a Republican primary in my life. But in the Democratic primary, the ballot actually says by voting in this primary, you commit to voting for the Democratic candidate.
Ah,
that's not enforceable, folks. You can tell delegates to your convention how to vote.
Yes.
You can tell delegates to your candidates in party meetings.
Yeah.
What they can and can't do. But you can't tell voters in an election to commit ahead of time.
Because it's not a loyalty oath.
You can't do that. You can't do that. Number two has to do with our favorite filmmaker, Dinesh D'Souza.
Yes. Yeah.
He's mad at Google.
Yeah.
Because if you Google America, it doesn't take you right to his movie.
Well.
And I pointed out on Twitter that he should have called it Happy Birthday, Dad, I'm Going to Jail.
Yeah.
Then it would have brought up that Was Not Was song.
Yeah.
And
damn it.
No, he
damn
still
it.
Would have been in trouble.
Damn you, Google.
Damn you, Google. Apparently, his movie's made $3 million. He's going to need that for his appeal. Yeah. All right. Finally, we want to do a shout out and a congratulations to Stephanie Miller for taking down, I feel, Carly Fiorina. Although Carly Fiorina was a shrieking harpy who kept over talking.
Yeah.
But on State of the Union, that was a real bad failure on the part of the host of State of the Union to kind of let Stephanie Miller have her say.
Yeah. Well, that was that.
But you know, that broke the rules. We can't have people actually saying, "No, Carly Fiorina, you are full of shit."
Right. Right. This is the takeaway. The takeaway. Everybody in the left took was, oh my God, thank goodness. This is what happens when you pair an actual liberal with an actual talking point conservative spewy Pez dispenser.
Yeah.
They level them. They really do. Now, if you looked at the after action report on the right, Carly Fiorina won.
Yeah.
She kept talking. She put her in her place.
Yeah,
she kept talking. Objectively, by if it was a fight, they would have called it and they would have taken Carly Fiorina out of the room. She embarrassed herself. She demonstrated why maybe HP did sack her, because she doesn't seem to have understanding of how money or economics or math actually works, or human nature, or really anything else. She's also a terrible person on camera. She sort of borrows Peggy Noonan's whispery voice, and she is just vacant. She just spews
bullshit. Part of that might be, I do want to give her an excuse. She is a cancer survivor, and part of the way people look and approach themselves on camera can be affected by that. And that's, bless her heart for surviving and so forth. But she was just wrong. I mean, she was just wrong about the Hobby Lobby case, in that as Stephanie Miller pointed out, the Supreme Court is deciding that someone's false but deeply held religious beliefs are going to determine insurance coverage for women.
And that was the point.
That's the point.
That was the whole point. And economics and Barack Obama. But she was a disaster as Mitt Romney's economic advisor. She was a disaster as a candidate. She doesn't know how to talk to humans on camera. She's just bad at it. Yeah. And so the fact that they paired her with someone who is a morning radio host who knows how to come right at you and knows how to do it with humor and facts and really just could put her right on the mat. I took away, yay, this is great. But I guarantee you the showrunners and the bookers
are never going to have Stephanie Miller against her again.
This was a mistake. Who the hell let this happen?
Yeah.
Because, and this is, again, this is why I rarely say this, but even Andrew Sullivan, even Andrew Sullivan, bless his heart, put his hands on his hips and made a little pouty face on his blog and said, who are these assholes who keep putting these neoconservative douchebags on the air? These bookers and stuff should be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's their job. Their job is to create an entertainment product that looks like an information program. And it ruins the illusion that Republicans are not insane to have someone there who can just punch their fucking lights out.
Oh, and so Candy Crowley had to put a stop to it.
She did.
I mean, she just had to stop it because that's not the rules of the game. That's not the format of the show to have a liberal take out a conservative based on fact.
A liberal who's on the show has to sit there quietly and engage in a civil fashion. And I've seen...
And say, well, you know, both sides are wrong.
I've seen Rachel Maddow wear that muzzle on Meet the Press, and it's heartbreaking to see her just sitting on her hands, gritting her teeth, not tearing people's throats out, as she could do, as she does
sometimes
every...
Sometimes she does go ahead and tear their throat out.
She does.
In a very sweet and nice way. All right. We have to stop now. I wish we didn't.
But Shalabi.
We'll be back next week. Shalabi. Okay.
Shalabi. Yeah.
All
There's
right.
something about Hobby Lobby Shalabi that I want to do at some point, but I'm not sure this is the week for that. However, each week
we post to our Facebook page and website at least one internet kitty sent in by you, the listener. This week we have two internet kitties, and their names are Godiva and Cleopatra. And that's really all you need to know about them. Yeah.
Of them's naked.
They're both naked, but beautiful, and the goddesses that you would expect them to be. You can send your internet kitty or kitties to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you in case you didn't notice. Even if you disagree with the letter this week, we still love hearing from you.
We do. We do.
Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service Go Postal Unions letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Driftglass, I didn't find the right Sarah McLachlan music for my birthday fundraiser to put, you know, me with just looking very sad into
your
the
sad
camera.
Face. Yes.
But I do want to say happy birthday to my mom. My mom and I have the same birthday on July 16th. We share a birthday with Will Ferrell.
Yes.
And Barbara Stanwyck. So there you go.
And I will exercise my personal privilege as the co-host of this show to wish my wife a very happy birthday.
Well, thank you.
And we're going for drive-through and doing it twice.
That's about what we'll be able to afford.
That's Homer Simpson line, but I mean it with great sincerity.
Well, you are always very good to me, Driftglass, and I love you very much, and your voice, you're just always very generous and very good to me, so thank you
for
that.
I love you, too. All right, so let's get on with it. The mushy stuff is over. How are the internet kitties doing this week, Blue Gal?
Well, the internet kitties can't wait for Dinesh D'Souza's appearance on MSNBC's Lock Up.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
All right, let's rock and roll with Science Fiction University, shall we?
Yeah, we have Science Fiction University this week, again, from our contributor, Doug Face Terman. And I want to promote both of our contributors to Science Fiction University.
Yes.
Dogface Terman's photography is at SaatchiArt.com/Talbot. And that Saatchi Art is spelled SaatchiArt.com/Talbot, capital T-A-L-B-O-T. I have a link to this on our Facebook page, but definitely worth checking out. He's quite a photographer and artist. So
gifted,
that's kind of cool. Very gifted.
Gifted. Mm-hmm.
And just remind everyone that our other contributor, Magnolia ePublishing, has their podcast at Mysteries Compound, which is at Stitcher Radio, and is a very interesting, eclectic show. You might enjoy it.
And Magnolia ePublishing, everyone, Magnolia ePublishing has been really kind to us over the years.
Over the years, yes. Yes,
both science fiction-wise and personally, and just you know, we have really great listeners.
We have very generous listeners, and we're very grateful to you guys. Neither one of these folks gets paid by us to do anything, and they just send these audio clips to us and for nothing. And
nobody gets paid nothing.
We deeply, deeply appreciate it.
That's right. Our business model is nobody gets paid nothing.
Nobody gets paid nothing. That's it. Everything's free.
Uh-huh.
Except when you go to the grocery store.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I tried writing down the number of clicks and hits I got from Eschaton the other day.
Yeah.
And exchanged that for a bag of oranges. And they said no.
Eschaton clicks are not currency. No,
they're not.
They should be.
Yeah. I said they're like Bitcoins, but.
They're like Bitcoins, but even less real.
Yeah. And they escorted me out of the store very politely. They didn't hurt my arm in any way. They just said, you know, please never come back. So I won't.
Okay. Dogface Terman has a very interesting kind of quasi sci-fi university / Bible bitch thing going on here. Science fiction authors at various venues talking about their religious spiritual philosophy.
And they have them.
Oh, definitely. Definitely have a spiritual worldview, which is reflected in their work. So that's kind of cool.
Now, never mistake a writer for his characters. But
no.
These people all have a really distinctive worldview that they draw from when they write.
All right. Number one.
If I locate certain kinds of evidence, and even people who disagreed with me to begin with, once they study the evidence, find themselves compelled to agree by the evidence. But wherever we go beyond reason into faith, there's no such thing as compelling evidence. Even if you have a revelation, you have a revelation. How can you transfer that revelation to others? By what system?
So it's in the mind you find your hope.
Yes, and I have to say I can't wait until everyone in the world is rational, just until enough are rational to make a difference.
That's the great and good Dr. Isaac Asimov.
That's correct.
Who wrote more books than anybody.
Unbelievable. Even more than Stephen King. He wrote more books than Stephen King.
Oh, yeah. And on more subjects, too. He wrote science texts. He wrote critiques of Shakespeare. He wrote articles, essays. He wrote science fiction. He wrote continuously his entire adult life. And it was really incredibly impressive. And a really nice, sweet guy, apparently. I only met him once via telephone. But a really kind and wonderful man.
And now you move on to number two.
I became a Zen Buddhist automatically because I remember being born. From the moment of birth, I remember every second and every hour and every day of my life. And when you have total recall, you are pure Zen.
Oh, that's my blog guy, Ray Bradbury.
Yeah, it is.
I have a blog quote by him. That's at the top of my header.
He's another prolific writer who was really conscious of being a writer.
He was.
He was willing to talk with writers about writing quite a bit.
Yes, and he did. He, a very generous, sweet man. My Twitter handle, Mr. Electrico, comes from a Ray Bradbury story.
Hmm.
And an Illinois boy, and really, I've said this before, Ray Bradbury, for all you people out there who are trying to get your friends hooked on science fiction but don't know how to do it, Ray Bradbury is the gateway drug.
Yeah.
Give them it's lyrical, it's beautiful. There's not a lot of hard science in it, but it's gorgeous writing. Give them some Bradbury, and they will. And then you can slip them a little Asimov later. They knew each other, you know. They were buddies, and then you got them for life. But yeah.
All right, number three.
Do you think that the church is, in fact, beginning to recognize that it may have to lose its priority, its eminence, as the sole arbiter of these matters, and that science will be allowed to come in as an equal partner?
Well, the church is certainly, when I say the church, the Roman Catholic Church has become very much more liberal. I had the pleasure of giving a talk in the Vatican myself in the Pontifical Academy of Science quite recently and met the Pope. And, of course, they're reinstating Galileo, and so things are moving.
Oh, that would be Sri Lanka's most famous American expatriate, I think, Arthur C. Clarke.
That's right.
Who wrote about big, giant ideas. I loved
Clarke. He doesn't sound American.
No, he isn't. he also inventor of the geosynchronous satellite.
Oh, wow.
He's the guy who dreamed up the idea of a stationary satellite off which you could bounce a signal on the Earth.
Because it would stay in the same place in orbit.
Yeah.
Always be over your head. Yeah. Right, right.
These are accomplished men.
Yeah.
For the most part, men. The women are equally accomplished. But when you're...
All of these are men. That's true. I don't know if there are any recordings of... We'll have to find out.
I bet you Ursula Le Guin's out there somewhere. I know Octavia Butler's out there.
Octavia Butler and Margaret Atwood, too. Yeah.
And James Tiptree Jr.
Yes. Yes.
Who's a lady?
Who's a
Don't
chick?
Tell anybody.
Yeah, no.
Who was?
Yeah.
These are so far. These are the sort of golden age. These are all
golden age. Okay. The next one, number four. See if you can guess who this is.
I may be talking about something that does not exist. Therefore, I'm free to say everything or nothing. I, in my stories and novels, often write about counterfeit worlds. Semi-real worlds, as well as deranged private worlds, inhabited often by just one person, while meantime the other characters either remain in their own worlds throughout, or are somehow drawn into one of the peculiar ones.
His mind is being blown. It's gotta be the amazing Philip K. Dick.
Yeah, it is Philip K. Dick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who really had a very distinctive point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And, tended into the somewhat unhinged at times, but
right, but
he could
definitely
write.
His stories were very cool in terms of questioning reality and what is human, and
and really
I enjoy his books.
In the same way Edgar Allan Poe was writing out of his own fears, his own terror of loved ones dying, being buried prematurely, of blood being sort of the avatar of their death. That all happened to him. I mean, I've told people before, he wrote The Raven while his wife was dying in the next room. And he was writing about how he was going to probably feel knowing that she was going to perish of consumption at some point.
Right.
And writers they don't live on the glass mountaintops. They write out of their real experience. And Philip K. Dick arguably lost his mind, but he stayed a writer. And that's what made him really remarkable.
And finally, if you don't get this one, you're in big trouble.
Ah.
Number five.
The universe doesn't know we're here. It just doesn't know. Einstein says God does not shoot craps with the universe or does not play dice with the universe. Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. It's random. The universe will one day give you the lottery for $16 million the next day colon cancer. The universe doesn't know. The universe doesn't care. The universe is just boogieing on along, having its own self a good time.
Oh, I can name that angry writer in two words. Harlan Ellison.
That's Harlan Ellison.
That's Harlan Ellison.
You've spoken to Harlan on the phone, so you really have no excuse for not recognizing his voice.
Harlan J. Ellison, about whom I know a lot, but I always find out more. You used to hang out with Maurice Chevalier? What?
Oh, yeah.
But a remarkable guy, and started off the angry young man of science fiction and ended up as the angry old man of science fiction.
It happens to all of us.
Yeah, and who's still writing,
He's on there. And talk about encouragement to young writers and encouragement to the science fiction community. If you're on board with respecting his work and respecting the craft of writing, he is right there with you.
He really is. And he really expects a lot of his students.
Yeah.
Back when he had them. But he made a whole career out of going to colleges and lecturing there and would berate people and would insult people sometimes and so forth. But in a curious way, he is a grand old gentleman who really understands and who really made the transition from a bit of a misogynist dick when he was a younger guy to a thoughtful, wise philosopher of science fiction. And
loves
stuff.
His wife.
Yeah.
And his wife.
And who loves his wife dearly and knows that he'd be dead for a long time now if it weren't for her, frankly. as all of us men would be, who married above our station.
Fine.
and I got to say this, he has a little chat room where he occasionally goes, a secret little chat room over in the corner someplace, where he shows up and types in and interacts with his readers and his fans, which is quite amazing. And
should we mention the time that he got in big trouble with his wife because he put his home phone number on the
chat room? Yeah. He didn't understand the internets that well. Having, you know, and this is not uncommon, you know, science fiction writers who write about galactic civilizations, right, and the fall of great empires. And it wasn't real clear on the concept of you just put your phone number out there. Yeah. Although,
did you just put our phone number on the chat?
Yeah. Although his phone number, well, this was true only 15 years ago, is listed.
Oh, wow.
And he answers his own phone because that's what, and I got to, you know, I have dropped him a line every now and then, and yeah, he answers his own phone. He was not happy to hear from me.
You're ruining my train of thought.
I interrupted the master at the work table, and don't fucking do that. But he's really a wonderful guy and a very generous writer. And but his chat room there, he abandoned television years ago. He has a very, very tart
ugly breakup
with television. He's very clear that the TV paid for a lot of what he has. But he says, you know, you go work for the TV like you work for the Pope. He's your patron, and you work there for a few months, and you make enough money to go away. The economics of working that way have changed a lot over the years. But he occasionally just abandons it as a completely dead medium. Mm-hmm. In his chat room, that subject came up of great fiction and television. Mm-hmm. You know, that television, the art of fiction on television has really come of age. It's quite astonishing. It is, I can't think of anything comparable really in terms of quality across the board than back in the old, when Rod Serling and Patachievsky were writing for television. The old live days, the old Alcoa theater days, which were before my time. But he came on and said, you know what? True Detective. And I thought, great. Harlan Ellison's going to tell me that the series I loved is shit, and here's all the reasons why, and I'm going to feel bad all day long. He said, is the best use of the miniseries format I have ever seen in my entire life.
Yay!
I'm redeemed. He likes it. But he stays current. He really does. He does stand up with Patton Oswalt.
And I have a question for you, Driftglass.
Anyway, I'm talking to
you. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you want to do the rest of the podcast?
Yes.
Then we got to stop.
Okay. I'm sorry. My sound editor tells me that I'm yapping too much.
You're yapping too much,
right.
But I love you.
I love you too. All right, let's move on to...
We're going to move on and record our political podcast. And thank you so much for listening. We deeply appreciate all of you. Bye.
And scene.